clear that I am an alcoholic. Actually, I'm a truly grateful alcoholic today, and I'd like to thank Randy for the wonderful introduction. From the very beginning of coming to Charlottesville and getting to be active in Alcoholics Anonymous, she was there from the very beginning. She was one of these women that, you know, you just were attracted to her recovery. So I'm really grateful that she introduced me. And I'd like to thank Billy for inviting me and your home group, the Blue Ridge Speakers Group, for inviting me to come and speak. My sobriety day is February 1st, 2005. My home group is a Vision for You, Charlottesville, Virginia. We always welcome you. We meet twice a week, once at the Salvation Army Wednesday evenings for an open big book study, and Saturdays at noon at Hinton Avenue United Methodist Church for a 12-step and 12-tradition meeting. We just changed that. I've been invited to share my experience, strength, and hope. And as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I do not propose that I am the spokesperson of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just my experience with it. And I hope to share in a general way what life used to be like, what happened when life is like now. today, I actually have a tremendous gratitude that I didn't have years ago. And it's only because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a tremendous gratitude that no booze or drug could have ever brought me. When I say that, I truly mean it. Because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and a relationship with a power greater than myself. And today, I actually am not afraid to call him God. to briefly qualify in a little bit, it's hard to remember a time without booze. There have been brief periods of sobriety, from an hour up to 5 years, but always followed by relapse. Early along the way, somewhere in my drinking career, I had crossed that invisible line from just drinking to full-blown alcoholic. I would like to say that upon entering Alcoholics Anonymous this last time, I was very much like the character of Reagan in The Exorcist. I mean, to the full tense. I mean, head spinning, piece of soup coming out. I looked like her. I certainly felt like her. But the things that were happening, like in the character that she portrayed as far as the way she treated her family, the violent rages toward my family, my friends, strangers. I had a loss of long-term relationships. I was isolative. I was full of self-pity, selfishness, manipulation, self-driven degradation, insanity to its full meaning. The large outcroppings of anger that I had, hostility, fear, guilt, remorse. That was me when I came into the rooms February 1st, 2005. That's exactly the way I felt. But alcohol, what type of alcoholic I was always blacking out to the point of oblivion when I came into the rooms. That was my existence every day. I drank to do one thing and one thing only, to black out. It was no longer bringing that euphoria that it did early on in my drinking career. Everything was surrounded by it. My whole life was absolutely that was it. Nothing else mattered. My family, my jobs, what I enjoyed to do, nothing else mattered, including the law. It didn't matter to me either. Nothing. I really didn't expect to see 30, and today I'm actually 30. We'll just say 30-something. leave it there. But I really expected never to see 30. And, you know, by the grace of God, you know, I've got almost nearly 3 years of sobriety, and 38, I'll say it. Not be afraid, I'm 38. A little bit of history about my past as far as where I came from. Grew up in Northern Virginia in Fairfax Centerville area. My father, former Marine and civil engineer. My mother was a security manager for a large department store in the D.C. area. I have an older brother and sister, and yes, I am the baby of the family. as far as religious backgrounds, and I have to share this, because this is the way it was in my family. My father, a stout Catholic. I mean, yeah, I saw your eyebrows go up. I mean, stout Catholic. And my mother from a religious background, Jewish religious background. So, yeah, the guilt was big on my fifth step, man. When I was going through my fourth step with my fifth step with my sponsor, it was there. But I cannot blame my parents for my alcoholism. I really can't at all. Yes, there was drinking in my household. And from an early age, alcohol was always there. And the solution in our family was to either, here, drink a little wine, drink a little Jack. It'll make things better. My mom's kind of things were a little different. Eat a little Entenmann's Danish. It'll make things better. Always turning to an outside solution to make things better. There were problems in our household, but it never went beyond that. It stayed within the house. We were the average, and I'll say my last name, Smith, as when Billy and I were talking when I was asked to speak, you know, Sue Smith is my name. And we were the average Smith family, actually the average alcoholic Smith family. And I did probably, and I have to also admit that I probably drank a little bit early on. But as far as my first real alcoholic drink, that first one that we all share, that very first drink was when I was 12 years old. It was with my best friend, Beth. It was the summer of 1982. I was 12 years old. And I almost can remember the day, the time, exactly what was going on. Parents weren't around. We were over at her house. And broke into her father's liquor cabinet and proceeded to make rum and cokes. Started off with a lot of Coca-Cola because the taste was kind of yucky. But found out soon enough that the effect of what the rum was doing was pretty good. And after a few more, it became really good. And I finally had that effect that I didn't have before. I was very shy, very quiet. I was always the girl that didn't speak up. And because what was going on in my house, I was the girl hiding in the closet a lot of the time from the arguments that were going on. That was me. But for the first time when I took that drink, it didn't matter. It didn't matter at all. You know, my beloved had arrived. Alcohol was the answer. And Beth and I proceeded to get quite drunk that day at 12 years old. And after that point, it became necessity for me. I really found that solution in alcohol. I would go to keggers with her on weekends. Mind you, we're 12 years old. Keggers on weekends with high school students. You know, and with the way that I drank, again, was to get drunk. It wasn't just to have a good time. I wanted to outdrink people. It was the only thing that brought me relief. I was finally comfortable being around guys. I was not that tall, geeky girl anymore. And the problems that were at home, it didn't matter anymore. All these problems just vanished when I drank everything. So that was, you know, my very first beginnings as an alcoholic, an active alcoholic. I definitely crossed that line from sharing a beer with Dad, or, you know, a glass of wine, little Jack Daniels, little hot toddies. I mean, those are the common things in our household. To an alcoholic. And my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thought about this today, was actually through a friend of mine. She was my same age. It was an all-girls party, New Year's Eve party, and no alcohol. Parents were not serving alcohol. And the only thing on my mind was to have a little good time. I knew where to go get the six-pack. But when the girls kind of took me aside and said, so-and-so, she's an alcoholic. And my image of an alcoholic was that guy in the gutter. Here she was. She was 13 years old, and she's an alcoholic. She was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my only thoughts were, hey, you know, go get the booze. Today it makes an impression upon me. It's, through the work, through the 12 steps, you know, I can look back on that now and go, you know, you look at these things and say, why didn't you smack, wake up then? But the alcoholic of my type, that didn't wake me up. One of my good friends, already in AA at the age of 13. It really didn't matter. So I went to parties on weekends, drank, and started to hide what I was drinking from my dad's closet also. I would always end up putting, like, rum and coke or rum, it's Bacardi, you know, getting some food coloring and putting some water and some more water and a little bit of food coloring to hide what I was drinking. And also, I would blame it on him. He's the alcoholic. Or my big brother. He's drinking. It was not me. Who, me, the alcoholic? Never. Never, never, never. That was my existence at that early age. A little bit more about my history. I have had some health problems all my life with my immune system. And, you know, drinking and drugging, I know I have a good friend today, will agree that drinking and drugging ain't conducive to good health. It certainly isn't. And at the age of like 14, 15, I started having serious infections with my immune problem. Ended up having multitudes of surgeries and being out of school, actually being on a homebound program in Fairfax County. And I'm going to try to stick with the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I will mention this briefly, that I was introduced to prescription narcotics. And I found the same relief that alcohol brought to me in this nice little convenient pill form. It was amazing. First, I started taking it as prescribed for pain management. But then, you know, that took over. I ended up getting physically better, but by my late teens, I was actually able to graduate high school. But I was in that cycle, was already going, where I drank, I drugged, I drank, I drugged, I drank, I drugged. And but that was my existence. As I said, I did graduate high school, I think, going by the grace of God. My beach weekend, I stayed in the hotel room because I was so sick from drinking. That's what I remember about Ocean City. I was sad. The fond memories. Ocean City. Too drunk to go on the beach because, you know, I'm puking up in the toilet. That was my beach weekend. Always had this thing in me, and a lot of us alcoholics, I've noticed, have this perfection thing in us, and I wanted to achieve. And I think from some of my experience from being sick and being surrounded by healthcare professionals, I found out, wow, they're helping people. This is a cool thing. You know, I want to help people. I had a friend who was a paramedic, and he introduced me to emergency medical services. And from a period of time, from 1989 to 1994, I became involved in emergency medical services, became a paramedic myself, and actually was a rescue lieutenant out of Manassas Park up north. And so ran rescue. I graduated from George Washington University, but all the time drinking and drugging. And, I kind of let go of this right now and just breathing out hard because it's hard as hell for me to admit this freely even today, that while I was a paramedic, I was under the influence. To the best of my knowledge, I didn't kill anybody. I didn't harm anybody. But the potential was there. It's amazing. It's really amazing that I didn't. And on the events like weekends, parties that we would get together, I don't know if anybody, your firefighters, volunteer firefighters, or paramedics, EMTs, I know there's at least one of you in the crowd. You know, there's this tradition of going out and partying on weekends. You know, it's the tough thing to do. And you get wasted to the point you can't see straight. That was the thing to do. Who can drink more? you know, little sweet Susie was the one, you know, the good little Catholic girl was the one. You know, my boyfriend at the time, this big, burly guy, Bob, you know, former Marine himself, I mean, big guy, and I would outdrink him under the table, I mean, and that was me. That was me, little Susie out drinking big old Bob. And the rest of the big guys. Could Susie have a problem with alcohol? Maybe. But also at the same time, you know, I was treating patients who were alcoholics and addicts, knowing of the horrific consequences of using and drinking. Knew it, saw it every single day, but had this big old blinder on me that this is not going to happen to me. I'm in control. I have self-knowledge. You know, I have that wonderful thing, self-knowledge. But by 1992, it had gotten to a point where I actually had a grandma seizure in my mother's kitchen. Yeah, that was one of the big first wake-up calls. I had previous serious health problems. Actually, when I was a teen, I'll back up a little. I ended up overdosing and ended up in the ICU at Fair Oaks Hospital. But that didn't stop it. You know, the police were family going, you know what, you got a problem. But in 1992, when I had that grandma seizure and the call went out, you know, which everybody heard, I couldn't hide my problem anymore. You know, seizures, 5652, Barrymore Road, you know, 22-year-old female. So my secret was out. Went into treatment at Fair Oaks Hospital and went through detox. And meanwhile, people came into my, you know, were surrounding me, which, you know, I never thought would happen. You know, I always had this shame about alcoholism addiction. But, you know, my boyfriend was a big part of that, actually, being supportive of what I was doing. I went to my very first meeting of an Alcoholics Anonymous in August of 1992. I was escorted down to the cafeteria. And this is the ironic thing, by another fellow classmate who was in treatment, actually in recovery himself, recovering alcoholic, Perry. I will never forget his name, Perry. And was introduced to the rooms. And yes, indeed, it was a room full of mostly men. But there was this one woman who kind of motioned to me, because I was scared to death, you know, and she motioned to me. I said, come here. And I sat next to her. I can't tell you what the meeting was about, the topic. I can't tell you any of that. All I remember is that woman in Alcoholics Anonymous welcomed me with her, you know, arms. Come on over. I was involved in an IOPT program, Intensive Outpatient Treatment Program, for about a year. I went to meetings because I had to. Got my paper signed because I had to. I did this for my parents because I had to. That's what I did that 1 year. I did not get a sponsor, did not get a home group, did not even look at the big book, did not even think about the steps. I did not care what the steps were. That was that 1 year. And towards the last part of the year, it was a miserable existence. And at the first opportunity, when I was given to relapse, I was out and running again. My alcoholism was just as bad as it was that day when I had the grandma seizure. You know, I was untreated. So for the next period of a couple of years, I worked in another career of customer service at that department store where my mom worked at. Failing relationship with this guy. Nearly closely died again. And in 1995, from the help of an intervention of family, friends, and also the Commonwealth of Virginia, state police, I was brought back into the rooms. When you obtain prescription narcotics illegally, it happens to be against the law. And my thing was going doc to doc and saying, one doctor, you know, give me some Percocet, going to the next doctor the next day, give me some Percocet, you know, and on and on and on. and also drinking. I mean, I combined the combination. I would do whatever it was to get out of where I was. I was reintroduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, and this time, maybe it was the consequences. I don't know. I really think it was a power greater than myself, a higher power. I was introduced to the big book. I was introduced to steps. I was introduced to home group. I became a service. Even got a sponsor. Did a few steps. But I only went up to step three. I never went beyond step three. I didn't want to take a fearless inventory of myself. Oh, no. I didn't want to, you know, do any of that stuff, turn my stuff over to the care of God. I didn't want to even think about making amends. I didn't want to think about praying. I didn't want to do any of that stuff. But it was a service. I was doing, I was super Sue. I was, you know, go, go, go. But towards the end of the latter decades of the 90s, I was already in that relapse mode because I wasn't listening completely to all the suggestions that you guys have made. And I moved to Hagerstown, Maryland, from where I was living in Winchester, Virginia, and already had everything planned out. I was in relapse mode. As soon as I was presented with that opportunity, that very first opportunity again, I went back out. And this time, things really got bad for the next several years. If you want to call it functioning, I did go to work, but was I 100% productive member of where I was working? No. I had a responsible job for other people's finances. You know, I showed up and that was about it. Always calling in sick because, God forbid, you know, I would wake up and miserable and I needed to get something in my system to be able to get to go to work. And if I didn't have it, I couldn't function. And that's where I was in the early 2000s. And in 2002, I tried unsuccessfully to actually drink myself to a death. I went on a month's journey trying to seek enough booze and drugs to do myself in. Went down out of banks, went here and there. My family actually issued a missing persons report on me. That's where things had gotten to me. And I was eventually found in Charleston, West Virginia. Recently, well, I laugh about that because recently, about a year ago, I had an opportunity to go back there. And it was a very healing opportunity. But that's where I was found. And I was taken back home and did enter yet another rehab. And I had a brief period of sobriety. In 2002, moved back home because my mother was diagnosed with cancer. And for a period of about 6 months, I stayed sober. Well, no, I stayed clean. I stayed dry. I did call one member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was about it. She died January 31st, 2003, which is ironic because that's coming up this Thursday. When you talk about a higher power at work, I think there is one. Because I think there is a purpose for me, and it is to maybe carry that message, and I think she's had something to do with it, you know, besides God. I really do think that. So she passed away, and within a couple of days, I went way back out. Man. I remember it. This day, I will never forget it, as far as if it was a family thing, her memorial service, and that good old box wine, and took this big old glass, and just boom. Again, I wanted that same thing that I had when I was 12 years old. I didn't want to think about any of my problems. I didn't want to be that girl in the closet hiding from the problems. I knew where my solution was, and that was in booze. And almost 2 years to the day, for the next 2 years, I drank. I drug. I drank. I drug. That was it. Ended up having my father, who was 74 years old at the time, having to take care of me. You know, here's this man who has worked all his life and taking care of me. I was in and out of the hospitals constantly with infections, getting transfusions and infusions, with my health issues, with ever-declining health along the way. Spent a few times nearly dying, but just kept on going. I think there is some part of me that wanted to stop, but I couldn't stop. About 3 years ago, this week, I was confronted. I was, the day before January 31st, 2005, I tried one last attempt to obtain drugs and alcohol. Ended up getting a speeding ticket. I went to my old dock up in Hagerstown, Maryland, and ended up with a speeding ticket from our friends at Virginia State Police. And ended up with a 4-bottle of alcohol, you know, little wine bottles. And that's all I attained that day. And was sick as a dog, physically. And on February 1st, 2005, I entered Augusta Medical Center. I had a horrific infection in my chest wall, and I was going to be treated for that. And I was treated for that. But my doctors also approached me and said, you know what, I think you got a problem here. You know, we know you're in Hagerstown. You know, we're talking to each other. You know, look at what's going on. You know, I was given yet another opportunity. And for a couple of days, you know, I had went through that period of going, you know, why am I doing this? I can't do this. Why am I doing this? You know, I know where my answer is. Maybe if I stay in this detox thing long enough, you know, I'm going to go back to my old tricks, because as soon as I get healthy, I promise my family I'm going to do this. I really will. You know, I already plan on the next drink as soon as I get out. Drinking on the way home. And that's where I thought things may have ended up. Meanwhile, that's the only thing I think about. Meanwhile, I've got all these wonderful doctors and nurses taking care of me, saving my life. And meanwhile, the only thought in my mind was the thing that was killing me. To get the thing that was killing me. All I had in my mind. But yet again, Alcoholics Anonymous came back into my life. It was a counselor who was also in recovery. Came into my room. I was in an isolation room. He came in a yellow gown. And Ashley said that he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he gave me hope. He listened. He told me of his experience. And he also gave me a prayer book that he had when he was going through prison, when he was going through a horrific time himself. And to this day, I do have it, and I do carry it with me in my pocketbook all the time. And when he said he was going to pray for me today, I know what that means. That man really helped me. So I stayed in Augusta Medical Center for about 7 days, IVs coming in and out of me, praying to the porcelain goddess, both ways. It was not pleasant. And for those who have experienced alcoholic withdrawal or narcotic withdrawal, it's pretty painful. But all those times that I've gone through it, has that ever stopped me? No. But what that man said to me, you know, he sparked something in me. At this time, my family pretty much had enough. They've had enough pain in me. They did something that was the greatest gift I've ever received. They said, Sue, we've had it. We've had it with you. We've had enough pain. We've had enough of your misery. You know, we don't want you back in our lives. And I spent, that was a hard thing for me to swallow. And I ended up over at New Hope for another 7 days of detox. And with their guidance, and also some folks that I knew back from Winchester in Alcoholics Anonymous, called my friend Debbie, who was that woman I called when my mom was dying, and asked her for help. She runs a recovery retreat center in Winchester, Virginia. And she said, Sue, if you can get up here, we'll help you. You know, we don't have a woman's bed available, but we have a day program. It means stay in the Salvation Army. But I knew this woman wanted to help me, and I knew she had a solution that I didn't have. So through some friends, I made it up to Winchester, Virginia, stayed the Salvation Army. And it being February, it being as cold as heck, it was very crowded, and ended up actually sleeping in the hallway of a Salvation Army shelter. It was very cold. Some of the most humbling experiences I've ever experienced happened there as far as the people that came in to feed us, you know, serve meals, Girl Scout groups. I remember this one little Girl Scouts groups came in with brownies and cookies and cupcakes walking around. And things like that really, to this day, very much humble me. And Debbie's reaching out to me. So I got involved, and at that program, you go to 3 meetings a day. You get involved, you stay involved. Within a short period of time, I was sick. I actually had pneumonia again that came up and ended up needing to be taken down to UVA. And it was agreed that that's where I needed to go. That's where my docs are. And not knowing how to get down here, I called that boyfriend of mine, Bob. Even though it had been years since we were in a relationship together, but I had known him since I was 14 and he was 16. And he brought me down to Charlottesville, brought me to UVA. Spent the next 2 weeks here, down the road actually, at University of Virginia with a bad case of pneumonia, lots of IV antibiotics, and was pretty much giving up hope. Because this is what sobriety's given me. You know, I asked for help, God, you know, what's going on? But at that time, actually, a social worker who's become a friend of mine befriended me. She came into my life. Even though she's not in recovery, she had known enough people in recovery. She has really good friends in the healthcare profession who are in recovery, so she knows what AA is about. And she ensured I got out of UVA, and she ensured I got into the Salvation Army down on Ridge Street, and, you know, started on this amazing journey. So that journey to recovery really started then. Pretty much had what I had on my back weeks later from entering the Augusta Medical Center, going to detox February 1st. I had pretty much everything I had on my back and 2 pair of underwear. That's what I had, you know. I looked like Linda Blair, you know. Felt like her, but I was clean. I was clean. I was being given this new lease on life. And it took a couple of days. I kept on asking folks, you know, meetings, friend of Bill W., you know, our secret talk that we talked to each other. People were like, what? And finally, this guy knew that this other guy is coming to pick up some guys and going to go to a meeting. And I said, meeting? You know, I was willing to do whatever it takes. You know, I didn't know these guys from Adam. For all I know, they're Freddy Krueger. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm there. I knew the solution is there. I knew I wanted it. I needed it. So this guy, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, came, picked up some guys, hopped in the car, went to Martha Jefferson, 10 a.m. meeting, Sunday, and sat through that meeting. And I somehow knew that I needed a sponsor because I knew I could not do it alone. And I just reached that point. I was willing to do whatever it takes, including going up to a woman and asking her, will you be my sponsor? And that's what I did. Felt like I was asking someone to marry me because I knew what it meant. It meant I was going to change. I really wanted to change because my life was so miserable. So I got a sponsor who is my sponsor today. And today, just thinking about it, her and what she's done for me. First of all, she is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. She has really given of herself in so many ways and illustrates unconditional love in everything she does for me. She helped strip down the layers of pretense and defense that I have built up all my life. She heard all my secrets and showed me how to rid myself of guilt, shame, and remorse. She guided me to trust in others and eventually myself for the first time in my life. But she had something she was willing to share, and that's how she went through the 12 steps. Her recovery, she was willing to share that with me. You know, I say that she is a woman of grace, dignity, and gratitude, and I really mean that. She can be a tough cookie, but she saved my life. She's one of the many women in this program and men who have saved my life. Soon enough, resentments were shattered, self-pity, things like that. She helped work through this stuff with me. Actually, I met her briefly this morning. And just talking about it with her, you know, stuff that's going on. And her solutions, you know, kind of pretty simple, you know, besides the 12 steps. You know, pray about it. pen to paper. You know, ask. Stuff that I never did before. And one thing she always says to me, and I think I truly understand it now, it's a God thing. Yeah, I thought she was that crazy woman when she said that. It's a God thing. What's this God thing? Today I understand what it is. I'm standing here because it is a God thing. You know, we're here because it's a God thing. I also got a home group. I call them a family. In the past, I was involved in a home group, but not like this group. We were all pretty much the same age of sobriety, doing the same exact thing. And, you know, we hear about these three legacies of recovery, unity, and service. We were handed down by you guys, all three of them. And they have done things for me. I mean, unbelievable things. We recover together, but when things have gone not so good in the last couple of years, whether it be, you know, not having a ride to a meeting, because when I am at Salvation, I did not have a car, amazingly. Imagine. Didn't have a car, having two pair of underwear, I have a sobriety, but I had hope. Besides my sponsor offering me hope, my home group has offered me hope. Show me, through what they do, their courage. They have given me courage and strength. There have been times in the last couple of years where I've had pretty bad health problems. You know, one of my good friends actually stayed overnight with me in the hospital room one time. My family was not there. She was. Car rides, you can't even mention about the car rides. I mean, so many of them. You know, we've gotten through this thing together. Last summer, I had a heart procedure. And there's nothing like waking up and seeing your home group there. You don't know whether you're dying or what. No! They were there. You know, you talk about unconditional love, and that's what my sponsoring home group gives me in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that's the unity part of the three legacies. And service, sponsorship. You think about sponsorship. You know, today I'm actually sponsoring women. Boy, is that a kick in the pan or what? Yeah, I've learned more about myself doing it, and I'm ever so grateful for my own sponsor in doing so. But for the previous men and women that have gone on before us, from that Bill and Bob, when you know they met that first time, and then they go out to the guy in the hospital bed, I'm you know, that is just an incredible gift that we are given in recovery to be able to be of service to others. Other service opportunities, whether it be making coffee at meetings. Boy, I did a coffee stint with a friend of mine for about 6 months, and we always joked about, you know, well, if we don't make it strong enough, you know, is it seeping through yet? You know, you know, and I've got to learn to love others, and also learn to love myself. You know, something I didn't do when I came into the rooms. But my home group, they mean a lot to me. You know, we do recover in unity. We try to practice the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have but one trusted authority, that is a loving God. And we try to carry the message to the suffering alcoholic. We try that because that, for me, that's what my sponsor showed me. And now it's my turn. And actually, in Dr. Bob's nightmare, I mean, he shares about, you know, the four things. You know, that sense of duty. It is a pleasure. Because in doing so, I am paying my debt to the man who took the time to pass it on to me. And four, because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. And indeed, that's why I do service. For the selfish, self-centered alcoholic, I mean, it's something for her to get out of herself and to do that. But if I want to stay sober, you know, I've got to. But today I also have a job. Never thought I would have had a job again. I was told years ago that I'd never be able to work again. And I have a job. I have a roof over my head. You know, when I was in the Salvation Army, I never thought that would happen again. But you guys have gave me hope. And by others sharing their experience, strength and hope is exactly what I was going through. Or just that smile, you know, that handshake, you know. Today I walk side by side with my sponsor when I go into a meeting. Randy will remember that I used to go into a meeting, you know, right behind my sponsor because I was so shy. I was a mouse. But today I could walk side by side with my sponsor. But that's about my story, and it's constantly changing. Am I better than where I was? Absolutely. Would I change my worst day from my best day when I was out there drinking? Never. My worst day today? Never. Today has been an amazing day. I am full of gratitude for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm full of gratitude for the men and women who have helped me. And now it's my duty to help carry the message to the next suffering alcoholic. It's my responsibility to be that reaching hand. So with that, I'd like to end with thanking you for letting me share my experience, strength, and hope. And thank you.